He created the universe. To him belong the heavens and the earth. The ever-living, he is the first.
Ladies and gentlemen, today we're going to be talking about how Islam can deal with modern problems. Now, many of us in the Western world, we believe that religion is somewhat outdated. Now we have this concept of modernity, modern times. So our traditional conservative values can no longer deal with modern problems such as economy and politics and life itself. However, I think this is very specific to the Judeo-Christian tradition, because if we look into European history, we see in the Middle Ages the Catholic Church using the coercive arm of the state to prevent any kind of thinking and radical change. This is why you had Martin Luther pin on a church door in Wittenberg his thesis attacking the Catholic tradition. And that created the environment of the Reform. And from the Reform, you had another environment that facilitated the religious wars. You had the 30-year wars, the 80-year wars, the massacre on St. Bartholomew's Day. It was a mess. There was blood in the name of religion. And as a result of this, you developed the thinkers such as Hugo Grotius, Samuel Pufendorf, Locke, and many others to actually de-scope religion, take religion away from the political sphere, and for it to deal with only individual problems. Now, Islam didn't have this history. It just doesn't share European history. And that's why we can't take European history and impose it on every other religion that's not unique to Europe. Now, with regards to Islam, it didn't have this problem because many would argue, Western and non-Western thinkers, that Islam has a unique role to play past, present and future, because its values are timeless and its methods to implement its values are also timeless. Now, this may seem like jargon to you, but I want to give you an example with regards to the credit crunch, to economics itself. How does Islam deal with the modern problem of economy? Now, Islam has a very unique economic principle, a general principle. And this principle is to remove the obstacle that prevents the distribution of wealth. This is the main premise, the main focus of Islamic economy. As many economists will tell you, that the number one economic problem is actually distributing resources and wealth. That's why we have this huge disparity in the modern world. We have a very few rich, and you have billions with no sanitation and living on less than $2 a day. Now, how does Islam achieve this? Firstly, it achieves this by having the correct geopolitical view. The Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, said in an authentic narration that the son of Adam, myself, yourself, the human being, has no better right than food, shelter, and clothing. So there's individual needs, individual essential needs have been defined. In contrast to Western economics, liberal capitalism, it states that there's too many needs and not enough resources. So it creates the mentality of competition. Whereas the view of the Islamic economic perspective, it creates the mentality of distribution because it defines the essential needs. And this is in line with many geopolitical studies. We know that there is enough resources in this planet to feed the human race and clothe and shelter if they were the size of 36 billion. At the moment, we're only 6 billion. The second point is that Islam takes away the concept of interest in an economic environment. It says interest is prohibited. The Quranic injunction, the Quran being the book of the Muslim, says that interest is not allowed at all. It's a grave sin and it's an immoral economic principle. The reason being is because interest is the impediment to the creation of wealth, therefore is an impediment to the distribution of wealth. Why do I say this? Well, if you take interest out of a transaction, it means there's more money in the hands of the individual. And you may say, well, the individual, how does that relate to society? Well, from an Islamic perspective, there is no taxation. The only form of taxation, which we call a form of spiritual tax, which is the zakat, it takes away 2.5% of your residual income. So when that person has more money as a result of not paying interest in financial transactions, that money is going to be dead unless he invests it, because it's going to be decreasing 2.5% each year. So this is an economic stimulus to take that money and inject it back into society to allow businesses and entrepreneurship. The other point I'd like to add is that there is no income tax in an Islamic society. For example, in America, you have an equivalent of 40% indirect taxation. Whereas in Islam, there's only that 2.5% flat rate spiritual type of tax. So it means more money in the hands of individuals. Therefore, there's an economic stimulus to inject it back into society. Another point that needs to be added is that in Islam, there is no belief of a huge free market economy, unrestrained and unrestricted. In Islam, according to the Quranic injunction, it actually says that the wealth amongst the rich should not become a commodity amongst them. So it cannot be monopolized. So this gives the principle that we cannot allow free market economics, which some economists argue was one of the facilitating factors for the credit crunch. So in Islam, there are things put in place to prevent monopolies. For example, if you compare this in America, in the soft drinks industry, there's about 3 huge companies that control this industry. So that's why sometimes you have expensive soft drinks and they don't usually taste that nice. When you prevent monopolies, you increase quality and decrease price. Another central point to take into consideration is the creation of money. Now, the creation of money in Islam is not free floating. It's not based upon nothing. It has to be based on something substantial, such as gold and silver, In contrast to Britain, for example, where money is controlled by the banks, it's created by the banks and it's free floating and not pegged on something of value. This is why many economists argue that the Islamic model is more stable, because when you print more money, it has to be based upon resource and wealth itself, such as the gold or silver standard. This is why businesses are not devalued when you have more money in society. In an Islamic environment, when you have more money, it means you actually have more wealth. And this is quite unique and fascinating because it has a historical precedence. Under the Ottoman period, over an 80-year period, inflation rose only by 8%. Over 80 decades, 82 years, inflation rose by only 8%. You get 8% in only 6 months in some European countries. So briefly put, when we look at some of the principles in the economic model and values of Islam, we see that it creates wealth, supports business, entrepreneurship, it doesn't devalue businesses, and also creates greater stability and significantly the distribution of wealth for all. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Hamza Andreas Tzorzis.
He created the universe. To him belong the heavens and the earth. The ever-living. He created the universe. To him belong the heavens and the earth. The ever-living. He is the first.
He's the owner of earth.